Welcome to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast for hormonal mamas who want to reclaim their own natural state of health to thrive and raise healthy kids. I'm Dr. Lisa Weeks, naturopathic doctor in Toronto, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little boy named Stuart.
And I'm Dr. Tony Reed, naturopathic doctor, birth doula, and hypnobirthing educator in Calgary, Canada, and I'm a perimenopausal mama to my little girl, Frankie. Thanks for supporting us for the past 100 episodes. Don't forget to subscribe and give us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also support us by visiting our Patreon page, where you can find out how you can join us for our monthly patron webinar, where we do a deeper dive discussion about all things perimenopause.
The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not meant to substitute professional medical advice. Always consult with your licensed healthcare provider. Welcome back, everyone, to the Perimenopausal Mamas podcast. Today, I'm so excited to be talking to Nicole North of Whiteboard Consulting, and she has so much more on the go. I'll tell you about that. But she was a previous guest in episode 11, and we recorded before the pandemic, I think early 2020. So I know a lot has changed for Nicole, so we're going to get updated on that. But we're going to be talking about leadership in kids today, how to foster that. So first, I'll introduce Nicole. So Nicole North is the president and founder of Whiteboard Consulting and has been leading large-scale leadership training initiatives with Whiteboard since its inception. Nicole's formal education includes an honors BA from the University of Toronto and an MBA from Wilfrid Laurier University. She is also certified as a coach and as a practitioner in Myers-Briggs Type Indicator Assessments and Training, Method Time Motion Studies, and Appreciative Inquiry. She is the creator, designer, and lead facilitator of the Limitless Leader Program that creates leaders and teams that feel limitless to create and innovate, paired with accountability and grace. Nicole has been designing and delivering online and in-person human skills content for the last 10 years and is a top-rated facilitator for her engagement and passionate approach to delivery. Whiteboard's clientele includes IMAX, Volkswagen, Mitsubishi, Hanes Celestial, Toronto Hydro, Toronto General Hospital, Canada Council for the Arts, WSIB, the Ontario Public Sector, the University of Toronto, Georgian College, and Humber College. Nicole is a retired fitness instructor who dances on her Peloton. She is a cottage country lover, a vegan cook, and can out karaoke almost anyone. And you're a mom too, right? You have three kids, right? How do you do it all?
I'm not quite sure. It sounds so much more exciting as you read it back to me. Sounds like I accomplished quite a bit.
You're done. You can retire.
Yes.
I love it, but I always love your energy. And I'm so excited today to chat with you again. I know your episode 11 was a favorite because you introduced the idea of bullet journaling, of how to use process improvement to get our kids engaged in their bedtime activities and into bed a little easier. We talked about digital minimalism. So we'll link to that one. But your energy and insight is so inspiring and refreshing. And I know you really help women and professionals foster their leadership skills. So I don't, you know, I haven't really thought about fostering it for kids. So I'm curious, you know, how we can do that for them. But I also just want to get a little update. What's been happening since we chatted in early 2020?
Oh my gosh, was there a life before the pandemic? Because I don't know what that looked like, sounded like, or felt like.
No, it's all a blur now.
Yeah. So my natural second, my third child. I have a stepdaughter as well. That's number three. But Norman was born right in the pandemic, April 22nd. So he is coming up on his second birthday. So it has been an exciting and interesting time having kids and running a business in this pandemic. We also moved out of the city right before the pandemic. It was planned long before that. So we're also now country folk. Nice. And it's been wild and exciting. And, you know, I think as with everyone, stressful and has had some interesting moments as I was, debating kind of what we would talk about today. You know, one of the other things was this idea of being a mom and an entrepreneur and burning out in the world that we're living with right now and in the frame of reference that we have to operate within. So, but I love this topic as well, this idea of kids and leadership. So that's what's new and different with me.
Yeah. Well, we can touch on the helping to prevent burnout as an entrepreneur if you want. We can touch on that at the end, but I'd love to hear your perspective because, yeah, you're running a company, you're offering these courses, you're raising your kids, you have a podcast yourself. So I'm sure you have a lot of insights on how to juggle things without, you know, keeping yourself sane. Most of the time, right?
I try.
We all need a good cry once in a while or a good scream.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, from that business perspective, it's been very different, right? We had that really slow lull when the pandemic first hit. And then I even went, you know, back into corporate for a little while and then came back to whiteboard. And then we had this huge surge of people in the fall saying, well, I guess we can't delay training anymore. And so then it was radically, radically busy. So that was certainly an interesting time to manage everything. But yes, we can talk about that at the end.
Oh yeah, we can talk about it now if you want for a few minutes. I'm curious what helped you get through all those transitions and all of that work on your plate?
Oh, I mean, I didn't manage it very well. I mean, I became incredibly busy, which was what I had been, you know, working very hard towards since the spring. I left the corporate gig, reminded myself that, you know, whiteboard was really where I wanted to be. And of course, my fabulous business partner, Ruth, had retired that fall as well. So this was also me kind of relaunching whiteboard in a pandemic, and, you know, with a brand new, you know, well, I guess he wasn't a new born anymore, but you know, just a little one still. And so I think it's been very interesting to figure out how to manage that, those time balances and this idea of just being online, sitting at your desk. There's no traveling to meetings. You just go from one thing to the next. And, you know, I was operating, I knew I was going to hit a burnout when I realized I was operating at a level that I had never operated at before. I was waking up at 4 a.m. and writing course materials, finishing them, you know, within minutes of delivering them at 9 a.m. Like it was just wild. And then putting the kids to bed and going right back to work with my laptop in bed with me so that if I fell asleep, I could just sleep and then wake up and turn it on again. So it was wild. And at first it felt energizing and I felt like a super mom. I was like, wow, look at me. I, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I'm doing all this stuff and I'm teaching courses. And then at one point you could just feel the, like, there was just like this dread kind of sitting within me. And it was like, I knew that at one point it was not going to become easy for me to wake up at 5 a.m. Does that make sense? It was like this, it was working right now and I could do it, but I felt like there was going to be a moment where it all fell apart. And so that's when I started to kind of seek some support. One of my associates is kind of an expert in burnout. So I had listened to her talk about burnout for ages, but never really thought about it as something that needed to apply to me. I mean, Lisa, I'm an entrepreneur. I make my own hours, right?
Right.
But that's not really how it worked. You know, and she had some great tips about, you know, offloading certain things and creating as much rest as I could. And then kind of teaching me the once I finally burnt out and kind of needed 2 weeks to vegetate in front of Netflix, then I was able to kind of come back and slowly get back into the groove and learn how to really, at the end of the day, for me, it became about setting my personal and work boundaries better and being a people pleaser and wanting to always have people like me and my clients like me, needed to be balanced with things like, I cannot get this done for you tomorrow, but I can get this done for you at this date, or, you know, your expectation for this, you know, can't be done until this time. Right. And so I think that was really where the lesson came, is that I could not please everyone. I needed to start setting some clear boundaries.
Amazing. I think as moms, as entrepreneurs, yeah, we learn as we go and we feel like we can do it all until we realize it's not sustainable and we're taking away various aspects of our life, whether it's sleep, time with the kids and family, time for ourselves and for our health. And, you know, you recognize that and then you got the help that you needed and really took that rest, right? It's a mindset shift and then really letting go of some things, which can be really hard as a mom, as a business owner. But I think that's a sign of a good leader, which you are, right? We used to think leaders to be like really, you know, stoic, do it all, don't complain. They should only be sleeping 5 hours a night. So that brings us to what is a leader? Is there a definition? What are the skills and strengths they have?
Yeah. And so, you know, this year when the Limitless Leader Program was born, to me, it became about it was actually a good friend of mine had gone to Tony Robbins and the way she described the experience. And she said she was up and jumping up and down in her living room and all this stuff. And I kind of shook my head and went, I don't get it. Tony Robbins has never appealed to me. I don't like anyone yelling. I'm not going to be jumping up and down and talking about my goals. And lo and behold, you know, she kind of convinced me and she said, you know, Tony Robbins makes you feel limitless. Like you can defy all odds, like you can do anything. And I looked at her and I said, isn't that what you dream about to be as a leader or as a mom, to have your kids or your team describe you as the person that made them feel like they were limitless, like they could defy all odds. And I thought, That is it. And that's how the Limitless Leader was born. And it was all about what are the skills that leaders need to possess to make other people feel confident and capable and powerful and respected and safe. And that really to me is leadership, is how do you tap into the skill sets and productivity of others in a way that makes them feel like they can accomplish anything.
And I think we aim to do that as parents too, right? We try to instill those skills like confidence and them feeling safe and feeling capable so we can apply it to our business life as well as to our family life. So are we able to, how can we get our kids to kind of tap into those skills to feel like leaders? Because I know that's a big struggle with kids is the lack of control or choice. They're always being told what to do, when to do it. How can we start to foster leadership in kids? What does that look like?
Well, I think one of the key skills that I think leaders need, and one of the skills that I think even I struggle to use in parent mode, is that idea of coaching and asking questions. And you know, we always hear this in the parenting books or the parenting blogs, like give your kids choice. Toddlers react poorly because they just don't have any choice. And so if you can say, you know, do you want to play with blocks or with dolls? What is it that you want to do that, you know, creates this feeling of autonomy? And that's the same concept we teach in leadership, is rather than saying, Lisa, please go complete the spreadsheet and do it exactly like this and add these things and then do that and then send it to this person and then go there, you've kind of lost all your drive and motivation to complete that task because I've dictated exactly how it needs to go. But if I said to you, you know, Lisa, what do you want to work on today? And we were able to kind of get through that spreadsheet in a way that made it your idea and your creative pathway to get that work done, then you're so much more likely to want to do it and to do it really effectively. So I would say one of the very first things you can teach your kids is asking them questions about what they want to do and how they want to do it. And, you know, I struggle with this too, letting go if the picture isn't, you know, the coloring isn't all in the lines, or that they don't want to build a building, that they actually want to just smash the blocks, you know, off the balcony. And sometimes being a little bit more open to that play and destruction and their ideas of how they want to do something.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really important skill, yeah, for kids to foster, is to like use their own minds, right? As parents, I know with a lot of the online learning and homework, sometimes parents take over and have their idea of how it should be done. But I love just giving them that autonomy to make those decisions, even if the outcome isn't what we're expecting it to be, and just asking them those questions, right? So I love that. So that sounds like a good skill to start to foster in our kids.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me anywhere near one of my kids if there's like a craft, because I will have immediately taken over the whole craft because I want it to look just like the picture on the box. And we cannot be putting the glue there. Absolutely not. So I have to practice that skill myself. But the more you see how this skill works with adults in this ability to say, you know, how would you like to do this? Tell me your thoughts. I think about my husband and I are constantly, you know, at each other about how something's organized. And he likes to organize things with the idea of functionality, right? So the winter things should be right here where you can access them instantly. And that's not necessarily my objective. My objective is that it just looks nice. I will do lots of extra steps to put away the mittens if to me the closet looks kind of aesthetically pleasing. It was really interesting. So we're constantly always kind of nitpicking each other at this. And finally, I realized that whenever I tried to organize it, you know, everything would get dismantled because he'd go looking for something and everything would just be everywhere. And so I found myself doing it for the first time the other day. I said, "Tom, how do you think this should be organized?" And he looked at me like I was insane. And I said, "No, really, because I think it makes sense now that if you're part of the organization process, that it's less likely to get completely dismantled every time." And it actually worked. And, you know, I teach this every day, but never thought to like use it in this context. And I think the same goes for kids, right? If we can ask them questions about how they want to do something or what they would like to do and allow them to own that, they're just so much more likely to modify their behavior or change what they're doing. And quite often it ends up in our benefit, right? It goes the way we actually want it to go. But without having that drag of saying, do it this way, no, do it this way, no, do it this way, no, do it this way for the 7,000th time, put your cup over here, right? It's just different. Like, where do you want to put your cup? Great. So put it there and let's just go with it.
Nice. Yeah. Cause I loved your example of using process improvement for getting kids to bed. So do you have some example, like an example of how we can use the kids' involvement in creating a schedule or routine so that, you know, those more challenging times, whether it's getting them out the door in the morning or getting them down to bed, can be, you know, sometimes those are the really stressful times in the day.
Yeah. And I mean, I use that. So my daughter has a very complex bedtime routine that involves a story. Hopefully I can end it at 1 or 2, but sometimes it goes a little bit longer.
Yeah, not 1 or 2 a.m., but 1 or 2 books, right?
Yeah, 1 or 2 books. Okay,
that's what I thought. But
oh, goodness. Yeah, 1 or 2 books, you know, sometimes a bit more depending on where the day is. And then there's a lullaby that she gets to choose the source of the lullaby, or, you know, what words go in the lullaby. And then there is what she calls a fall down hug, where she jumps and makes me fall down. And then, oh gosh, then what do we do? And then there's the option of tickling or no tickling. Like, there's like a whole thing. And I realized that the more I tried to force it, so especially when I was suffering from burnout and I had so much work on my plate and I was really struggling, I found I was kind of rushing her through the protocol and I was like, nope, we're doing it like this. Nope, nope, nope. Just one book. Da, 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 da. And I would make it so didactic, and it was just, then it would just go on even longer and longer. And when I started to leverage some coaching questions to say, okay, what do you want your lullaby to be about? And she would kind of hum and haw and hum and haw and hum and haw. And so then I would give her some options. Do you want your lullaby to be about trolls or minions? Then she was able to make a decision, own it, and move on to the next step. Tickling or no tickling? Okay, yes, we want tickling tonight. Great. And so I just found that when I was able to put a little bit of control and autonomy and power and creativity and innovation in her bedtime routine, the routine is still very strict. But allowing those options within it allowed her to feel like she had some control and let her enjoy that bedtime routine. And it made me enjoy the bedtime routine too, because it wasn't so exactly the way I thought it should go. It surprised me, and often we had a lot more fun doing it. So that's what I would say, that that tool of coaching and asking questions to guide the actions of your children just makes them feel good. And it can be quite surprising and rewarding as well as a parent.
Definitely. I think that's such a great example. And then she has a voice in the routine. I know so many kids are, you know, not given the chance to speak up or say what they like or don't like or what they want to do or don't want to do. So I think that's a really powerful tool to use. I'm going to incorporate that our bedtime. We try to give them choice, but it's been, when we're in a rush and we're tired and we're like, you only get one story and we're just going to meditate for 5 minutes, which is basically just us telling stories without the book now. But when we're trying to like make it so structured and like right to the minute, then yes, that's when he pushes back, when Stuart's, you know, trying to get more time or acts up a little bit. So I love this idea of more choice in each of those little pieces too. So I'm going to bring that into our bedtime routine for sure. And then that would, I guess, be fostering, would that be fostering leadership then in our kids, would you say? Like, obviously you're a good leader because you're guiding her along, but would that be developing leadership skills in our kids by doing that?
I think so, because they look at everything we do and they watch us and they imitate us so much. And so if our interactions with them are consistently do this, go this way. Now we're going to read this book. Now we're going to do it this time. No, that's too long. No, there's no tickling here. It comes here. And if we're so rigid about that, think about what their interactions with other children might be like. Mm-hmm. No, we're going to play blocks like this. That's not how you make the craft. You make it like this. But I feel that by teaching these types of skills and questions to our kids, they can start utilizing that with others. And wouldn't that be amazing to watch our kids, you know, go to a playmate and say, what would you like to do? Would you prefer to play with blocks or dolls today? I mean, that would just be, I would get goosebumps if I saw my child saying that. I think that's so beautiful.
That's right. Yeah. Cause we do lead by example, right? And they learn by copying us. Like they do mimic so much of what we do and how we speak to our partners, to, you know, if they see our online Zoom meetings. So I think that's a great example of, learning in the first person and seeing how to deal with other people. Are there other good qualities that make a good leader that we can foster in our kids?
I think the big one that applies to kids is that idea of self-confidence. And again, you could read this in a million mom blogs and parenting and behavioral parenting and all that stuff. And I'm by no means the expert, but when I think about the analog to leadership, this idea of 5 times positive reinforcement and positive feedback to negative feedback. And I think about that as we try to course correct or guide our children, maybe instead of saying, don't do that, don't do it this way, stop that, that's not nice, that's not good. Even using the feedback models that we use with leaders and their teams, right? To ask permission. So I might say, Lillian, can I tell you something? And I wait for her to give me permission and make sure that she's focused and that she's listening to me so that I'm not just saying, Lillian, turn off your iPad, turn off your iPad, turn off your iPad, turn off your iPad for the millionth time, right? But say, Lillian, can I tell you something? And get that focus, get that eye contact, and then describe the situation. I know that you're watching your iPad right now, and that's great, but the time is going to be coming up soon. And describing that situation, being very specific about what's happening. So the acronym we typically use is ASBE. So ask permission, describe the situation, what's the behavior. So I might say, I've asked you before and you haven't yet turned it off. And then the impact. The impact is that makes it difficult for mommy to let you watch your iPad if you never turn it off when I ask you. So then kind of moving into feedback in that way. So ask situation, behavior, and impact. And it's that impact one that often gets missed. And of course, you know, my 3-year-old or almost 4-year-old doesn't always get what I'm trying to say, and that's okay. But I'm building that habit and that structure, and not only for critical feedback like that, but I do it very often when she does something great. And I'll say, Lillian, can I tell you something? Do you know when you just shared your chocolate chips with your brother Norman? That was really nice. And I think that makes me really happy, and that makes Norman really happy, and that makes us a really nice family, and makes us know that we can all share with one another and all enjoy all the things that we have in our house. So I'm very persistent about using that model and being as careful as I can to give that feedback in a 5 times positive to every 1 time negative. And of course, I don't want anyone to be mistaken that I am running around like Mary Poppins being like, hello, Lillian, may I tell you something? Please turn off your iPad. You know, it's definitely not like that. I'm just saying, if we can make some effort, they're going to mimic it. And it's really adorable to watch my 4-year-old, you know, she'll go into someone's house and she'll say, hi, Sherry, can I tell you something? And, you know, our neighbor will go, yes, Lillian. And she'll say, your house looks really beautiful today. I just love the decorations. It makes it feel like a real holiday. And my neighbors are just like looking at me like, what is happening? And I'm like, oh my gosh, she's using ASBE on you.
But that's great.
You can see she imitates it, and it's so lovely and so endearing. And so that's why I think it's so prudent. It behooves us as parents to try and teach some of these skills about lifting people up and giving them that confidence and making people feel good. And mm-hmm. So I think that ASBE model, when we can give that positive feedback 5 times for every 1 piece of negative feedback, can really be impactful to little ones and how they interact with others.
Yeah, that's such a great acronym. And it's something we can all start incorporating, and such a timely example too, because of kids being online so much lately with the schools being closed the first 2 weeks of January, and Stuart struggles with getting off the computer too. And we try to give him like a timed warning, but we don't always start it off like, can I tell you something? Can I ask you something? I really like that. And then the impact, we're working on trying to make it more natural consequences. Like you said, like if you don't get off of it, then it's making me have a hard time letting you use it because it's a challenge getting off the screens for you. So I really love that. And then the idea of really reinforcing the positive behavior, because the quickest thing as parents is like, no, don't do that. Stop. You're doing that wrong. And that really doesn't benefit the child, and it doesn't make the situation any better. So I'm going to start incorporating this ASBE, and we'll put what the acronym stands for in the show notes, so people can start to incorporate that as well. But I love it. So they're bringing those examples to other kids' lives too. So that definitely is leadership being passed along.
Yeah. And I think about, I had this kind of brief stint back in corporate, and, I'm certainly my love language is 100% words of affirmation. So it's very easy for me to do this. But it's amazing to watch that behavior get replicated and role modeled. Like it's quite beautiful. You know, she'll talk to her brother in the same way. And so whenever I see that, I'm inspired even more, to be intentional about offering positive feedback more than I correct, or having a little bit less of that control freak in me that, you know, the kitchen has to be perfect and the craft has to be perfect. It's okay if I've given them some autonomy to have fun.
For sure. And then how do you do it when you have more than one kid? Like, how do you, you know, each child is different, and how do you hone in on each of their individual skills to help them kind of manifest as their own individual leader?
Oh, I have no idea, Lisa. It's a total gong show over here. Okay.
I appreciate your honesty.
No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I mean, it's trial and error. It's continuing to repeat those things that work. I mean, again, if you make this analog to leadership or using these skills, it's, you know, when I can coach and ask questions and get them engaged for their own needs versus my needs or their siblings' needs, they're just so much more likely to do it. And I think much, you know, we always talk about children needing routine and structure. Again, there's that leadership bit about accountability, right? The best leaders that I've ever had weren't the easy leaders that were just like, yeah, great job, Nicole, keep doing what you're doing, right? The best leaders I ever had were the ones that held me accountable when I didn't deliver and told me why it impacted them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if we talk about kind of managing those different personalities and different things, when we can coach and then hold people accountable to what we expect from them, we get that more consistent behavior. And again, it's not always perfect. There's still a lot of crying over here. I'm not going to pretend.
And I find it fascinating too, because you have training in the Myers-Briggs questionnaire and personalities, right? I don't know a ton about it. So do you bring that into your household as well? Do you have a sense of where your kids fall with that? Or is that more as you're coaching other clients?
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting. I love the Myers-Briggs. I know it is to some a very antiquated tool, like it's an older tool, but any of those other personality assessments are often derived from the Myers-Briggs. So if you can understand the fundamental of Myers-Briggs, it can be a game changer for how you lead others, and similarly for how you lead your children. And I'd have to reflect on it a little bit more. My youngest, Norman, I can't quite tell what his type is going to be yet. I get the sense that he has a preference for extroversion, like Lillian. I would gather that Lillian has a preference for intuition. So that's that bigger picture thinking, telling stories about things. She's very creative and constantly making up stories about things. Again, for Norman, I'm not sure I can tell. Lillian, I'm not sure whether it's natural to her or learned from me, because I have a huge preference for feeling. So it's very much, you know, always about empathy and compassion and how are you feeling, and maintaining the relationship. Again, can't tell that for Norman yet. Maybe still too little. And let's see, judging and perceiving, that's another hard one. How people like to complete tasks. I can start to see in my stepdaughter, who's 10, some of the reasons that we come in conflict are because our differences in type. Mm-hmm. She is very detail-oriented, and instructions are very literal to her. So if I say later on, we're going to do this, she will make sure that that happens. Mm-hmm. And she'll say, but you said this. And I'll go, well, what I meant was eventually we'll have pizza. But she said, no, you specifically said this afternoon. So it's very interesting to see. I'd be very curious to see in families where you can sometimes have, I wouldn't say a stronger bond. We all know you know, you love all your children, to the end and back. But I wonder whether certain relatability or relationship things can ultimately come down to type. But yes, I will have to reflect on, I think the younger ones, it's too difficult still to tell what is their natural predisposition over what they have learned or what they're emulating from me. But as I reflect on the older one, I can certainly see why some of our disagreements occur, and that's because of that difference in type. So I think that's very fascinating. And as again, as a leader, we want to be aware of those type differences, and it shouldn't be my kid's job to meet me at my type. It should be my job to flex and bend to what their type is, just like as a leader would flex and bend and adjust their type to let their employee or their team member shine, right? If we want to talk about our kids feeling limitless, if we want as parents to say that we've made our kids feel limitless, like they could defy all odds, that's because we let them thrive in their natural state and we let them thrive there. We didn't force them to fit the mold that we think is right.
That's so fascinating. So you have all this going on behind the scenes as you're approaching each child and then keeping that in mind as you're trying to engage with their leadership skills and build their confidence. So, and then that's so interesting. You do the trainings on that as well.
Well, you know, you make me sound very thoughtful and intentional about every single thing I do with my children.
I'm sure.
Maybe it's subconscious. Some of it, you know, when you brought up MBTI, I have to honestly say, I hadn't applied it to the kids, but you'll have to bring me back and we'll talk about one in more depth, because I would love to see how that actually plays out once I'm intentional about it.
For sure. I love it. And then with Norman and like him being 2 years old, like what age can we start to help our kids foster leadership? Like, are there things you're doing with him now, or is it still too young?
Oh yeah. That's interesting. I would definitely say with Norman, and because he's, you know, the baby, he certainly is still, it's a lot more of the, no, don't do it that way. No, don't open that cabinet. I'm certainly less open, you know, he's a little too young still to really say, well, you know, how would you like to approach this problem? I think there's still some basic things, you know, what would you like to eat, you know, yeah. Toast or waffles? What would you like for lunch? Nuggets or chicken pot pie? You know, what is it? So I think it can start there, and really, enhance as they get older. I think you can start to apply more and more of this. And again, I think it should all come from the intent. And once you can visualize that, it's like, how would you want your kids to describe you when you're old? It's like, oh, my mom made me feel limitless. Like I could do anything, and she supported it all. And she let me be me, and she let me do it the way I wanted to. You know, she guided and corrected and helped. I mean, you know, this is by no means saying like, you know, to your teenage kid, like, well, what would you prefer to do? Cocaine or drugs tonight? You know, other kinds of drugs tonight. What do you think? You know, it's not like that. You know, there's still course correction, and there's still space where, you know, you have to be directive, right? When there's safety involved, you must be directive. There's no room for choice or asking someone, how would you like to leave the house now that it's on fire? You know, it's like, well, we're going like this. And so there's certainly that balance. But if we can take some moments to think about how we could teach our kids to be great leaders, teach our kids to be empathetic and compassionate and hold others accountable and lift people up, I think that can be so powerful.
Mm-hmm. That word limitless, that is such a powerful word too. And who doesn't want to feel that way? And then anything else that you want to share about different activities or tasks we can do with our kids to foster their leadership skills? Any parting words on supporting that in our children?
Yeah. The one thought I was thinking about that I am trying to work on with my stepdaughter is this idea of psychological safety. And so, you know, she's very kind. She's a people pleaser. But she doesn't always like my cooking.
Cooking's so good.
Thanks. I think so too, but the kids hate it. You know, apparently, you know, vegan organic cooking with an Asian twist is not, you know, fun for kids, but, so I'm still working on that, but I have trouble getting her to say, you know, Coco, that's what she calls me is Coco. Coco, I don't like this. And here's what I don't like about it. She'll just kind of leave it and be afraid to tell me that she doesn't like it. And so I've been really working on this idea of psychological safety and saying, I need you to know that I won't be upset if you don't like it or you tell me you don't like it. I need to know so that I can make it better for you, or I cannot put that ingredient in. But if you don't tell me, I can't change. And then you will continue to be disappointed. And I will continue to be disappointed because I can't help you. So trying to teach that concept of, I want to make you feel safe to say that you don't like it. I want you to feel safe to say, I don't like this ingredient, or it's too salty or too sour or too sweet, or I like more of this, or I like that, has been really important as they get kind of older. And this is such a prudent topic now in leadership, as well as people are trying to set boundaries between work and home and family while all living in one house together and, you know, homeschooling and virtual school and all of those things. So, I think that's another neat kind of exercise, is that how do we make people feel safe to express their opinions? And, you know, the strategy, you know, is continue to say, I want you to share with me. And even if it's not the answer that you like, to continue saying, thank you for sharing that feedback with me. Thank you for sharing that with me. That, you know, that's how we can start to make people feel safe to share their thoughts and their opinions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's helping them foster their voice, because I've seen situations, yeah, where kids don't voice up if it's their turn to pick a game or a song and they just want to go along with the pack, but really creating time and space for them to express themselves. And then, you know, really acknowledging when they do, it is such a powerful tool to use too. So, wow, we have some really good things we can start to incorporate, you know, starting today. So thank you for sharing all of that about leadership in kids. And before we go to the next part of the podcast, how can people follow you? What are you offering right now? How can people connect?
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me at whiteboardconsulting.ca on our website. You can find me on LinkedIn at Nicole North. I'm pretty active there and share a lot of content about leadership and things that are going on. I'm also on Clubhouse at Nicole North. And you can also, of course, just email me at nicole.north@whiteboardconsulting.ca. And then we're also on Instagram at whiteboardconsult.
All right. Yeah. And your energy is so contagious. So I definitely want to check you out on Clubhouse too, and check out some of the episodes. I've listened to some of your podcast episodes, but I'm going to go back and listen to some more. So now we'll move to the next part of the podcast. So we'll first share our super mom moment. Did you want me to go first, Nicole?
Yes, please.
Yes. Okay. So this weekend, we actually took Stuart skiing for the first time, and I've been dreaming about taking him since he was a toddler because I love skiing. But, you know, before having kids, we used to go fairly often, but I had only been once in February 2020, and then Pete and I went to Tremblant in 2016. So I really haven't skied that much lately, but we're like, we're going to do it. We took him. And I think it was a great confidence building activity for him too, because we really, you know, didn't have any expectations. We just wanted to have him to have fun and have a good time. I was a ski instructor in a previous life, so I taught him a little bit, but then we also signed him up for a private lesson. So I was still there, but I wasn't the one telling him to do what to do or not to do, because I knew that could get kind of annoying. So it ended up being an awesome day. We had to basically tear him off the ski hill to go get lunch because I knew he was going to get hangry. But that's my super mom moment, just starting to be able to do activities with Stuart that I love doing too. Of course, you know, playing and things like that are fun, but just to share my passion, our passion of skiing with him, that's my super mom moment. And what's yours, Nicole?
I love it. Oh gosh. I would say my super mom moment this week is Norman is starting to, what is it? They always say show signs of interest in potty training. And so he's demonstrated some interest in potty training. And so, you know, he made pee-pee on the potty 2 times this week, Lisa.
Wow, that's my super mom. That's amazing. At 2. Wow.
Just before, he's not 2 till April. So,
oh my gosh.
I thought that was pretty fun, and it could totally be by fluke, but I'm going to take it as my super mom moment.
I love it. That's a really good one. Way to go. And I know you're doing a great job and I'm doing my best too, but we'll share our mama mess up. So I can go first if you want. Yeah. So with everything going on, I forgot when it was Serbian Christmas, so Orthodox Christmas, right? So 2 weeks after, you know, December 25th is typically another celebration. We usually get together with Pete's parents and have a nice meal and exchange some small gifts, but we couldn't do that this year. And I forgot. So in the morning of, Pete got me flowers and a nice card. I had nothing for him. We sold the Christmas tree up, but so I felt really bad about that. My brain just wasn't there because of everything going on. So that was my mama mess up. And I obviously didn't get Stuart anything small either. So I took him to the toy store. We went out for a walk and he was going to spend some of his allowance. So we had $5, which wasn't going to get him very far. So I said, you know what, for Serbian Christmas, I'll give you an extra $5. And he was able to buy a toy for $10. So I think he kind of got over the disappointment of not having a gift either. So that was my mess up. Whoops.
Oh, so sweet though. You covered it well. You got it. You got out of it.
And what about you? Can you think of a mess up?
I guess it wouldn't be a specific thing, but something I've noticed recently is, you know, my husband's always having fun with the kids and playing. And I always feel like, oh, I'm always just tidying the kitchen or cleaning one last thing or doing one last thing. So, you know, kind of my overarching mess up is sometimes I'm so much more focused on some menial task than really enjoying some time with the kids or with the family. So it's something that, you know, I'm trying to be more, less fussed about that every dish has to be completely clean and spending some more good time with the kids. That's my little mess up.
I hear you. I don't think you're alone with that, right? I catch myself. I just got to do this first. It's like, oh, I could work on that too. So thank you for sharing. You're still doing a great job. You're aware of it. And then we'll move to our mama must have. So I can go first if you want. I didn't realize how much I was using it until it broke, but I had a Zule kitchen frother. You know, I'm not fussy about the brand, but or like a milk frother, I guess it's called. So it broke and I didn't realize that I was using it, you know, to mix different nut milks in my tea, to mix collagen or MCT oil in my decaf coffee. A fork really doesn't cut it. Some of those things don't mix so well. And it's so nice this time of the year to curl up with a nice cup of tea with it all frothy. And so I definitely have to order another one. So that's my mama must have. What's something you just can't live without right now, Nicole?
Well, mine is not a, like a tactical thing, but my mama must have right now is time for myself to recharge and rejuvenate. And so whether that's making sure I get, you know, a 45-minute walk outside. We live up north and it's really, really beautiful and there's trees out here, or whether it's hopping on the Peloton or something my husband and I've been doing on the weekends, which I know this is not monumental news, but we split the day. And so someone gets the morning shift with the kids and someone gets the afternoon shift. And then the other person can go and be a human and run errands or get your nails done, or you can just go watch TV downstairs, but it's dedicated free time that you must not report to anyone. And I don't know why it's taken us this long, but here we are. We're making sure we have time to individually recharge so that we can be the best for each other and for our kids. And I think that probably is another great kind of leadership connection, is you can't lead others unless you are focused and ready to go and rested and recharged. And the same goes for parents. You can't parent really well unless you've taken care of yourself first.
That's so important and a great reminder, I think, for all of us, right? There are ways to do it, even if you have more than one kid. You know, the one of the parents, if they have two parents, can look after, and then the other can have their recharge time. So I love that. Thanks for sharing. And thank you, everybody, for joining us today. You can email us or connect with us on Facebook and Instagram. And we'd love you to subscribe, leave us a review and a 5-star rating if you enjoyed this episode. And please tell your perimenopausal mama friends about us too. You can also support us by visiting our Patreon page, where you can find out how you can join us for our monthly webinar, where we do a deeper dive discussion about all things perimenopause. And thanks again, Nicole, for coming. You shared such great words of wisdom and tangible things we can start to incorporate to foster leadership in our kids. And stay safe and healthy, everybody. Until next time. Bye-bye.